Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depends wherever you are on this lovely planet that God has made for us. Today I'm with a friend, Alison McDowell. Probably you know her from previous conversations we had in the past, as well as her extensive work in the last at least 2 years, obviously much before that. So stay with us. Please share this broadcast and we'll be with you very shortly. Thank you. Well, well, well. Alison, hello, darling. How are you?
I'm rejuvenated. We were away doing some site work out west. Big sky country. So it was nice to get away from the city for a little bit.
Yeah. And what you've been doing? I mean, because I know you keep yourself busy. So what you kept yourself busy with?
Yeah, a lot of it's been a little bit off. Offline lately. But actually, so a number of us gathered at to attend the Mormon Transhumanist Conference in Provo, Utah. And we met there with my friend Lynn from Dallas and Jason from Colorado and my friend Drew from Tucson. And so we were all there to sort of ask some pointed questions of their Human Plus agenda. And I think we put a bee in their bonnet, so to speak.
Have you filmed some of it? I mean, if Jason was there, obviously there's some videos out there, right?
So I have a playlist that you can link to on my YouTube channel of all the site work that we did. It was a paid conference, so we videoed our Q&A when we asked questions. We had about 5 or 6 questions during the course of the day, and those videos are up on my playlist. And then actually the Mormon Transhumanist Association has their own YouTube channel. So the videos are all now up, and I would highly recommend. The reason that we went out there was that there's a gentleman by the name of Tamika Tilleman, whom I did not realize was a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but his career trajectory, he was high level State Department staff under Hillary Clinton, and then became part of the think tank New America, which is largely Google funded. And he set up digital identity and this impact investing that I talk about a lot. And then he went on to Andreessen Horowitz venture capital firm. And they're very deeply into all things tech. Mark Andreessen, you know, has talked about reality privilege. And if you're advocating for the real, then you're really backward and actually maybe racist, because the real world will never be fixed. And so we should all live in the metaverse. And so this guy, he's the keynote. And I'm thinking, okay, well, if you're out there talking about this stuff is out of the closet. Like, there's no embarrassment now to say you're part of the Human Plus, you know, post-human program. Yes. So we went out to ask some things about their blockchain smart contract plans, because the entire conference was centered on decentralization and blockchain too.
Mm. So, you know, recently I published quite a lot your material from a year ago, 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago. Because what I've seen happening in Israel recently is like new opportunities for investment or for making money, and it's all to do with impact. It's all to do with social impact investments, social investments, new economy, blah, blah, blah.
We were just ahead of the curve.
Yeah, exactly. And the funny thing, because, you know, most people have not come across your material or mine. So they are raving about these new opportunities, you know, because with the corona, with the crisis, we need to look for new markets, blah, blah, blah. And they don't see how they fall into the trap. So I've been trying to warn them in Hebrew, writing posts. This is just in the last couple of weeks, just so you know, using some of your material, publishing one of your, well, the major presentation that you showed a year ago or so, or the companies involved from Israel, you know, involved in the social impact and impact investments. Just so people can see that some of the banks and some of the major companies in Israel and government offices, they knew about what's coming long before Corona. I mean,
right.
It was all planned in advance. So just so you know, there's
I think it goes back to the Manhattan Project, Shai. Like the work that I've been doing is that literally they've been planning this global brain project, which runs on blockchain, at least since the Macy conferences in the 1940s. It's overwhelming. And I'm following it back, and it has everything to do with altered consciousness and energy. But like the high level academics throughout our country, but also internationally, and tapping into like mysticism and spiritual, like across cultural, religious and faith practices, especially having to do with India. But the Stolman family is sort of centered to that. And then that's part of the formation of the State of Israel. So they haven't locked it down yet. And literally some moms showing up at the conference going, wait, you know, maybe not. Maybe we don't do this today. It rattles them because they can't justify it. I mean, unless, you know, there's plans for some catastrophic meteor thing that's going to blow the planet up and we all have to turn into, you know, digital avatars and be mind uploads to some, you know, off planet computer. There's really no reason to go along with this. So, you know, they're not being forthright about it.
Yeah. So what have you discovered in these last couple of weeks? I know you gathered some new material and it's not new, but it's new bits and pieces to fit into the puzzle and connect the dots with. So please share with us.
Well, so I about a month ago, I came across a reference to the idea of, and it's something I'd come across before, but like Teilhard de Chardin and the noosphere, the sort of, you know, where is consciousness, right? Is it in your mind? Is it out there? And the research that was connected with that. And so I had seen some information about Teilhard de Chardin that he was like early AI, you know, the idea of the noetics. And additionally, at the same time, there was this person, his name was Julius Stuhlmann, and he was working in collaboration with a man named Fritz Kunst, who was essentially the head of theosophy in North America. But he had gotten his start with Annie Besant in Adyar, India.
Mm-hmm.
And they were collaborating with a gentleman by the name of Pitrim Sorokin, who is an applied sociologist at Harvard. Now, Sorokin had left, I think he had like fought the Tsar and then fought Lenin and become expelled. But his father was actually an icon painter, right? So there's this mysticism that goes back across cultural practice. So all these people who are like, you know, whether they're coming from, you know, Jewish faith, theosophy, India, meditation, Orthodox, you know, Russian Orthodox, they knew that there was something here. And so I found Sorokin's actually so he was a professor at Harvard for years and years. He collaborated with Stuhlmann and Kunz on something called the World Institute. And it was also in partnership with a gentleman named Oliver Reiser, who is a chair of philosophy at the University of Pittsburgh. Now I'm in Pennsylvania. So usually when I look at all of this technology stuff, it's Carnegie Mellon, which is in Pittsburgh. That's the center of a lot of the military contracting.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because it's both technology and the arts. You know, that's two sides of Carnegie Mellon. But Pitt, Oliver Reiser was at Pitt, and he actually had asserted this idea of, a world sensorium, like consciousness and energy and creating this global brain. And so it was Reiser, it was Stuhlmann, it was also a gentleman by the name of Ervin Laszlo, who is a Hungarian systems theorist. And he created the Club of Budapest. So many people have heard of the Club of Rome.
Oh, yes.
There's also the Club of Budapest. And it turns out his son, Alexander, is also a systems theory guy. And he was part of this Global Education Futures program that was connected to Pavel Luksa, that was a transhumanist. And so it's all kind of going together. It's like systems theory, global brain, digital projection. It goes back to at least 1941. And originally, Stuhlmann was cooking this up in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm like, Cleveland? Mm-hmm. You know, I had this very strange experience about 5 years ago where like had these Google alerts, and it offered up to me this event that was in Washington, D.C. And it was about social impact and Internet of Things and, you know, AI. And it was with the IMF. So there were two meetings. One was at this co-working space, the 1776 Microsoft co-working space in D.C. And the other was at the IMF. So I'm like, and it was just an Evite. It was just like a public, like anybody could come. So I'm like, Mom, I'm going to sign up for that, take the train down and totally go see what they're about. I'll just sit in the back and see what they're
doing. But back then you didn't know what you know now.
No, I mean, it's like onions, right? Layers and layers. Exactly. But I knew like Internet of Things, impact, IMF, that's not going to be good. I'm going to go see. So I show up in this co-working space, all red, white, and blue, you know, and this is very important for the US because this is all patriotic, right?
Yeah.
Technology, innovation, progress. And, you know, I think this contrasts to the indigenous centered, like an animist worldview here, but there's these contrasts. There's nobody there. Like everybody's just co-working. It's a co-working space. They're co-working. And I'm thinking, okay, where is everybody? I'm there like 15 minutes early. The receptionist's like, oh, have a coffee. We'll be with you in a minute. I'm like, okay, I go take pictures around the thing. And then they come up and they say, okay, well, we'll go back now. And it was like me and three other people. And I'm thinking, and like, I'm much less cool than I mean, I'm already kind of over the place, but I'm like, really? We go in this conference room full of boxed lunches. It's an angel investor pitch meeting, Shai. Now that nothing of that is on the event at all, but literally it's, mm-hmm. Nine people in this pitch room for Internet of Things and impact investing. And they're all from Ohio. And they start out going, you wouldn't imagine that this is all happening in Ohio. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I wouldn't really. I mean, I knew Cincinnati is a center for a lot of the social impact finance around children, Strive Together and Knowledge Works, but didn't know much beyond that. But there were people from Hyperloop. There were people from blockchain digital identity. There were people with certain kind of radio transmitters. And they're all pitching and like, maybe only one of the three of us had any money. Like I clearly didn't have any money. It was a deal. But these are these very connected people like 5 years ago, and they were going to be the people making up the public-private partnerships. You know, they were going to be the deal makers and they were from Ohio. So there are these layers. I did not realize that John D. Rockefeller grew up in Cleveland.
Right.
I did not know that. That's his childhood home. Standard Oil incorporated in Cleveland. Now there's something very much about oil, not just the money and power of oil, but I think the energetics of oil itself and some sort of spiritual aspect of oil that's in all of this. Cleveland, the Cleveland Clinic, the largest, earliest community foundation was also in Cleveland. So here is Stuhlman connected with Case. It later became Case Western Reserve, but at that point it was just called Western Reserve, which was an innovator in technology. And they were already setting up these plans for this global brain in 1941. And then later, and Stuhlman, he was based out of Brooklyn and he was a lumberman. That's what they said. He dealt in lumber, which is also interesting because I think that there's something energetically about trees and forests in all of this, which is I just lean into things. I'm like, there's something about the trees, right? And he was a lumberman, but he also had investments, right? They were very well connected. And so he actually went to India in 1951, I believe, during the Indian independence movement to scout it out with, I'm trying to remember, Norman Cousins, I think was the guy's name. And he was there to do some sort of Voices of America patriotism tour of India. But on the side, Julius Stuhlman paid his own way and rode his coattails all around. And there's the congressional record for like 15 pages of people going, who is that guy? What was he doing there in India? We don't know. He wasn't invited. Like he was messing everything up. And so he was there, I believe, with the theosophists.
Yeah.
Getting into the consciousness stuff. And wow. And then later in with Sorokin at Harvard, he was working with someone named Therese Broussard, who was a French cardiologist, Shai, in the 30s. And she was connected to UNESCO later, studying the yogis and heart rate, all about the heart. And this was Sorokin's because he wanted to measure love and altruism and put it on a metric so he could measure it. Sure. And because only if they were going to create a digital brain, global brain, or some sort of counterfeit representation of life on Earth, everything has to be computable. Everything has to be, you know, are you a one or a zero? You just have to be able to measure it. Yeah. And so all of the goodness of heart, energy, love, altruism, peace, they're going to put it on a dashboard. And that's what the systems theorists were all about. So anyway, that's what, so I've been tracking because it turns out Sorokin's archives, strangely, were scanned. A lot of times you'll find archives that just have finding aids and they'll give you a glimpse into what's in there. Mm-hmm. But he actually scanned all of his papers. And they're at the University of Saskatchewan. Go figure. Like, how does this Harvard professor's paper end up in Saskatchewan? But you can read them. And if you look up Foundation for Integrated Education, which is what that really seems like Fritz Kunst's baby, the theosophist. But that was combined with this World Institute, which was Stuhlmann's, and coming out of Harvard, they're all scanned. And there are letters literally from Kunst theorizing about like high-level physics, particle physics, because the chair of this organization, the Foundation for Integrated Education, his name was Henry, I think, or maybe Harry. Henry or Harry?
Anyway.
Marginau. And he was the chair of physics at Yale. And his focus was on material reality. So these were not small, like, fringy people who were doing it. These were the highest level, probably Skull and Bones, Ivy League, that want to get into consciousness. And they want to get into, a lot of it is through like faith-based mysticism all across the board. And so Stuhlmann later, like his cohort of very influential New Yorkers, you know, they were central in establishing the State of Israel. They were in all of this mix and they were connected with like helping Shabbat and like Hasidic Judaism, this mystical stuff. But I think they were into it, not, they weren't doing it because they wanted to share it with everybody and make everybody's life better. It was a power play. And then later, Julius's son, Stephen Lloyd Stuhlmann, he was on the board of the Weizmann Institute. And so in very early on advanced high-level computing and physics and biotechnology. And so I had sent a few weeks ago, because sometimes I think, I don't know, it feels like there's a greater power. Like, how did I end up in this room full of people, angel investors, being like, hey, Hyperloop, digital identity, like 5 years ago, and me going, that's not right. You don't put people on blockchain. That's not right. You know, is that these things get put in front of me. So this article from, I think, 1963 was about the golem. And that's sort of the title of this episode. Yes. Because Stephen Stuhlmann, he was on the board of the Weizmann Institute. And when they made their second mainframe computer, they did an early one, I think, in 54. And then it was like aging out in the early 60s. They did a second one. And I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name, but he was the key mystic, right? And he said, you've created the golem. You need to call this golem Aleph, this computer that you just did, because that's not right. And so.
But you mean the mathematician or Gershom Scholem?
Gershom Scholem said, you've made this golem.
Yes.
And look, so when you look at this, Shai, this article, it looks like it could be some like the Atlantic magazine. It does not look old. But if you look at the date, it isn't 1961, 63. If you scroll to the top, I think it's paywalled, so you can't see all of it. But it is, if you scroll down just a bit more, the date is on it. If you like to the top, the title. Yeah, so 1966. Okay, yeah. So this was 65. How does Google give me this article? No offense, but like, it looks like a contemporary article. That seems like an article that would be in an archive, right?
Yeah,
but not
yeah,
just
yeah.
showing up here. Oh, here's you know, Biden connected with this article. I was supposed to read this article. And so it says, okay, you know, they said, you've built this golem, so you're going to have to live with it now. And the guy said, mm-hmm. okay, well, can you come to our, you know, ribbon cutting for this thing and explain why? And so this whole, and I think we should link to it. I've actually saved it as a PDF because it's paywalled. But if you read through, he lays out the connection between the golem of Prague and the rabbi of Prague, and how Theodor von Karman, who was a key figure in physics and jet propulsion at Caltech, is a descendant of that rabbi. Like, he claims it direct lineage. And wow. At the end, they're saying, you don't know what you've built. And I've been begging the Weizmann Institute to set up a study on magic and demonology. But instead, you just put all your money into applied mathematics. So good luck with that. But, like, please, to the people who made the golem and the golem, don't destroy the world. And that's
how exactly. This, I want to show it because, and obviously, I've read the article. Obviously, it was very interesting. And just to say, I mean, Gershom Shalem is really famous, all right? And he was a really good man.
Yeah.
In his angle on things, and he exposed a lot of truths over the years.
Right.
And just to say, the guy who have created this Golem of Rehovot, right? His name is Dr. Chaim Pekeris, all right? He's here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the last phrase that you said that Gershom said was, where is it?
Yeah, it's there. All my days, I have been complaining that the Weizmann Institute has not mobilized the funds to build up the Institute for Experimental Demonology and Magic, which I have for so long proposed to establish there. They preferred what they called applied mathematics and its sinister possibilities to my more direct magical approach. Little did they know when they preferred Chaim Pekeris to me, the person who made the computer, what they were letting themselves in for. So I resign myself and I say to the golem and its creator, develop peacefully and don't destroy the world. Shalom.
Yes.
And so I think, I mean, in all of this, like, I went to Salt Lake City or to Provo to tell these members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who are central in this Human Plus program, don't do this. Like, please think twice. There are very serious concerns about this. Now, the State of Israel has also been described as a leading edge of transhumanism. Like, there are many articles about that. And so I feel like I'm supposed to also, you know, back then they knew. In 1966, they knew where this road was going. And we still have to say, wait, you know, of people of all faiths, especially people who have, like, a direct energetic connection, like a more... a connection maybe outside of some of the institutional aspects that people need to know because it's the metaverse is the entire world, whether you're Buddhist or Hindu or Jewish or Theosophist or Congregationalist or Catholic, it's this metaverse thing, this energetic thing is the world over. And so people of faith, I think, really have to, sort of get situated and understand that there's a legacy of people who've been sounding the alarm about this for some time.
You know, there's a phrase in Hebrew, I will say it, Hagolem kam al yotzro. It means that the golem has risen on his maker. So he's taking over his maker. And I think the biggest warning we can put here that you put out is, and Gershom said, don't destroy the world. I mean, it's exactly that, because what this AI machine may be able to do is to destroy the world as we know it. And it seems like many people, like you just mentioned, and many others I know, and organizations, and large sums of money are poured into it for decades, if not centuries, is to control the human world and to control this creation in such a way that it destroys it. And I'm thinking, you know, I want to focus on Israel, because I tell you something, I don't remember where I've seen it, and I showed it on one of the morning shows I'm doing in Israel, in Hebrew. I showed some pictures of Israeli or Jewish scientists, whether in Israel, somewhere in Germany, I think, or Italy, I don't remember, but I've shown some of these publications that Israeli/Jewish scientists have contributed to transgenderism in terms of DNA manipulation and how to convert, let's say, in animals, so it's easy to speak about it for now, how to convert male frog to a female frog, for example, all right?
Yeah.
In the DNA level. And what I've been digging into in the last week or so. Not that I haven't done it before, but kind of refreshing my memory with some new materials coming up, is that the desire, when you say transhumanist, you know, it sounds something, all right, people don't know what to think of it. They can read in Wikipedia, whatever other sources they have. But actually, what they are trying to do in a way is to combine male and female in one body. This is androgynous, as we know. I mean, the word androgynous describes exactly that. So for me now, transhumanist is also that, is this androgynous creature. Now, I'm kind of connecting things in my head, which maybe you can reflect on that in a second, that maybe transhumanism and Satanism and what they are striving for, is this, is to create this androgynous creature. And they use this AI machine or the golem, okay? And I would like more your angle on Israel part in it, but they use this AI machine or the golem in order to create their sick vision of life or of the world or of humanity, which obviously we know they want to eliminate, at least the majority of humanity. So it's, the more I look into it, it's getting sicker, all right? And I think at least one of your qualities is that you're able to see a very wide angle and also very deep, and you have amazing memory for details and names and dates and, you know, and that's why I love, I mean, I love your peculiar mind and the way you see things.
It's very confusing. Connect the dots.
It's really, it's quite rare, to be honest. I mean, really, really, really. And, you know, from the first time I saw you with Naomi Klein, it was, yeah, with the, I was like, whoa, I want this, I want to speak with her. And that, just then, it's what I did. I found you out and I wrote an email and I told you, let's talk, let's do something. Because it's really important, your angle, what you bring is rare. And so my question in a way is, what is Israel part? Or the golem of Rehovot, or the computing AI machinery in creating this metaverse? What is, it's not Israel part, it's the those who pull Israel towards this direction, obviously. It's not me, it's not my wife, right. it's not
a
Israel.
System.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so I would just say it. So I have a bit of a different position about some of where things are going. And I think the more I study how they're developing this AI golem, like how they imagine doing machine learning, neural nets, and information computing technology and communication, digital communication, is that someone, and I have sort of a short video about it, but there's a competition out there essentially to look at the world as systems of communication. And you, for a system of communication to happen, you have to have a transmitter and a receiver. And then you have to have, and the communication can be anything, like you and I talking can be verbal, it can be written, it can be symbolic, DNA, like chemical, like there's all sorts of communication. But this guy, Perry Marshall and George Church, they have this $10 million competition to try to figure out the nature of the communication. Because essentially what it presumes that the first communication, that there had to be God, because you couldn't communicate anything until someone said, this is what it means, right? When you do this and they do that, that's what it means. That's the meaning. And so what these information communication technologists are about, I believe, is to extract as much data about our minds, our bodies, and not just humans, because I'm really very clear that a lot of the last 2 years, the focus has been on humans, but really it's the entire natural world, which is even stuff that maybe Westerners might not imagine are alive, right? Rocks, mountains, things like an animus. Yeah. They want to extract all of that communication in an effort to break the code of life, to break that code and to replace the ultimate coder, which is God. You know, however you understand God to be. And so there's this communication problem. And so I think at least in the near term, until they can start to approach their idea to like force break into the code of life. They actually need us. Now, they don't want us strong and robust and critical thinkers, but they would like to have people that they can manipulate, put through their paces, try out their neural implants and their exoskeletons, and to shift towards this cyborg life. Mm-hmm. And that's something I keep trying to ask people to look into, which is this Japan Moonshot Project. Now, the Japan Moonshot Project is a program of the Japan Science and Technology Agency that launched in December of 2019. And this program, they have 7 goals. A lot of them are about like human robot evolution, AI, quantum computing. But goal 1 is that by 2050, we humans live outside of a physical mind and body in time and space. Like that's straight up their program. And people, like I've had a friend share that with some, you know, teachers when she was, they were concerned about telepresence robots in the classroom. And they were like, stop sharing extremist content. I'm like, this is like the NSF of Japan. This isn't, it sounds extremist, but it's not some bizarre thing. No, this is the government, and it's in collaboration with the U.S. National Science Foundation and the U.S. Department of Energy, which is why I say this Manhattan Project thing never ended. The radiological poisoning and the shift of manipulating the communication, bodily communication, towards this post-human future has been ongoing and covert and dual use, always dual use. And so I think that where you imagine maybe it's about a physical body that is genderless. And I do believe that control of reproduction is central. This is a eugenics agenda, although I feel like it's not necessarily a mass death event at this stage, but it's more about managed population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Very connected to the Fabian socialists. A lot of this stuff goes back to the UK, the crown, you know, their intention of managed reproduction. But the managed reproduction is for post-humanism, right? Mm-hmm. Is to get us to that place. And yes, along the way to do the internet of bodies, the internet of bio-now things, and get all of this data. So that's sort of where I'm at on this. And blockchain is the central feature, because if what they're trying to do is to create a counterfeit simulation of the cosmos, which this Japan project literally, it specifically talks about, they talk about it's Nippon Telegraph and Telephone, digitally twinning people, digitally twinning societies, digitally twinning cities. They're like, here's the fishbowl. This is how we're going to do the glass. This is how we're going to do the water. This is how we're going to do the wavy plants. And literally they break it all out, and it signals. It's electrical signals. So I think one of the roles, I mean, again, Israel was in that first cohort of digital nations. How are they going to do it? Well, the medical passporting systems are central because they need all the data interoperable. Mm-hmm. But here they're doing digital driver's license. They want you to interact with your government through digital connections. And I know Israel is central to that because they were advising the state of Rhode Island in 2020. Yeah. Saying like, oh, this is so great. Now everyone's afraid to go into your city, your town hall. You just do it all online and you have a digital identity for your government. So there's the twin of you as a citizen. There's the twin of you as a learner. There's the twin of you as a health system. and what, because of the nature of Israel being the smart, you know, the
Startup nation,
the smart nation. And because of the fact that the way society is structured around, the defense sector, right? And that all the people go in and then you cream the best students to do the cyber work, right?
Yes.
That signals intelligence. Literally, when they say they want to turn your material body into a cyborg as a signal, it is signals intelligence. And I'm not saying just Israel, because the U.S. has been doing that as well. And I feel like the more I look into it, that the Cold War that we were taught, there was a whole different story going on. And that story was about weaponizing the atmosphere, managing radar and frequency and radiation towards representing us as this counterfeit digital signature. And so part of that, you know, from the 8200 unit, which is very specialized in the signals intelligence and cyber, again, just because how society is set up, the elite, you know, because you can screen everyone, pick the people who have the best minds for this, train them up, give them money to make these businesses, right? That will ultimately you know, advance the program. And then the impact are the alumni of 8200, which they want to solve the problems, right? I mean, that's the story. And I'm sure that's the story they tell themselves. I don't think most people out there are deviously thinking, ha ha ha, I'm going to create a digital twin of the world and like become like gods. Sure. Some of the Mormon transhumanists think that, but like, I don't think most people think that. They just get up and they say, oh, you know, I'm an achiever and I've done well in school and I've done well for my country and I'm going to solve this cancer or this neurological problem and I'm going to make some money and we're all going to be happy. And no one tells them about Oliver Reiser and Julius Stolman and Fritz Kunst and the global brain. And, you know, and then when you share like, hey, the Japan moonshot thing with EU 2020 and the US Department of Energy, like, this doesn't seem right. And they're like, no, that's extremist. Stop that. I'm in my story. My story is that I'm making some money and doing good things for the world. And it's hard to break that up. It's hard to shine a light on that. And that's sort of where I've been at the last.
You know, it's a few days ago, there was something like with the World Summit with Klaus Schwab and all these guys. And what's his face? Yuval Noah Harari, you know, Klaus Schwab, right hand, with a transhumanistic view. He said, I'm trying to look for it, but I couldn't find it for now. But it's like a few seconds of a video, a very short clip, where he's saying the corona was needed, right? Mm-hmm. So we can take information from inside the body. Okay, which goes straight with what you're saying. I mean, it's all about signals. It's all about information. And they look on life is very mechanistic. I mean, if right. It's all signals, let's see what this does, and how they communicate. Let's take this, copy it, and create something else without the spirit, without God involved. And what Yuval Noah is doing is actually laying it out, saying, the corona was needed so we can do that. And right. For those who still think that injections will save them from something, I don't know, from a virus that maybe does not exist, I'm not sure. They are totally in the wrong path. I mean, to see what he's saying, to see what the Schwabs of the world are saying, it's like it's in our face. And especially here in Israel, you know, in the last couple of years, even before, but in the last couple of years, I've been trying to say, listen, Israel, or at least parts of Israel, the startup nation, your neighbor, which is maybe involved in a startup company or 8200 unit, as well as many other organizations, funds, businesses, startup businesses, etc., they are deeply involved in creating this metaverse. So this one is involved only with the chips. This one involved with the software of the brain. This one, everyone has a different part, and they don't really see the big picture because they are busy with the daily work, which they think is really important. They don't see how they create parts of the golem, this new golem they are creating. And I'm thinking, can't you see what Allison is saying? Can't you see what we're talking about? It's really frustrating. And how we can show it better to people, especially for those who don't want to do their own research, you know? These are the people we need to show them. So how we can do a better job in showing more people that it's a twisted creation they are creating, and it's on the expense of us and our children. How we can bridge it? How we can show them better?
Well, I go out places. Unfortunately, now I have Jason to film me here and say, I say, this is where it lives. It lives in this office park, right? And I think sometimes people imagine that it's about blame. And so I'm not here to, because I think the more I look into things, you know, I think we have our soul journeys. Like, we're here for awakening. And so part of the reason I've pulled out of a lot of other online stuff is that I feel this is narrative warfare. That's very clear. Information warfare is center. It's happening at all levels. And it's even happening, like, in the resistance space, whether people know it or not. So having some clarity about what you feel is the accurate story and what is the problem, right? Like people are like, you know, and I've had sort of challenges with folks lately of, we're going to find the people who are responsible and do something. I don't know what they think they're going to do, like the courts, right? I mean, or, you know, I don't know what exactly, but they imagine that there's, there is some layer of people. And while I think that there's a head of a snake, that's what they keep doing. There's the cabal, there's the head, who's at the top? And I'm like, I think that looking at how they train AI, that this is an emergence of the way they do these simulations is they set parameters, they set rules, and there's a certain amount of autonomy or flexibility. They don't, it's not totally rigid. And then they run the simulation, right? And they see what the outcome is. And then they tweak it. They tweak the rules and then they run it again. And that we are currently at, you know, at least since the Roman Empire, you know, this imperial project, this legacy of domination that has come up. And so I think that it's emergent out of a network, out of a soul sickness that we didn't create. We were born into this. Right. We were born into this moment. We, you know, this thing goes back, you know, here to the founding fathers. I'm in Philadelphia. This Ben Franklin Freemason guy with his electricity. You know, I wasn't in charge of Ben Franklin, but here I'm living in Ben Franklin's legacy in my city. Yeah. And so it's emergent. And so we have to like take ownership and I think heal ourselves and figure out the situation of the story. And I can't tell. Like, I feel like I know the story that I'm trying to tell. And it's one about domination. It's one about both not shaming, but individual responsibility. Mm-hmm. It's going to be about healing through some sort of reckoning and energetic and reciprocity. It's not just about people. It's about the whole world. And so when we went to Utah, you know, I was talking a bit about the radiation. Because my framing for us in the United States is this domination principle goes back to our removal of the people who lived on what is now, you know, the Americas before Westerners got here. And that was done in a very brutal way, very systematic. It was done through outright violence, economic violence, policy violence. Like that way of life was incompatible with the idea of private property ownership and freedom or whatever we imagine, that had to go away. Their children had to be taken from them. Their religion had to be erased. All of that had to happen to have this American dream, right? And but the thing is, and we're not taught all the history. I was really good in school and my gosh, I didn't know anything. And so I'm in Utah and I'm realizing, wow, you know, they did all of these test bombs all over the West and they irradiated. They were waging war on the U.S. population, like just rural people in Nevada and Utah, blowing up bombs in the atmosphere. And then 20 years later, people get leukemia and they die. And that was your government doing that to you, right? Like even after, you know, many of those people were veterans and went to war. So, you know, when I went, when we were in Utah, we did the conference and then we traveled. The landscape of Southeast Utah really resonates with him. And it's this very rocks and it's just beautiful. It's very powerful. And he said, I'm gonna show it to you. And I'm like, great. That would be a good balance after this, the energetics. We go down and I'm like, Jason, that's where all the uranium is.
Wow. Like,
that's where all the uranium is. And it was the Four Corners area. It was the Ute and the Navajo. And so there was a lot that happened there with the way it was inappropriately mined and the harm that was caused. And that goes to back to Prescott Bush, the Bush family and vanadium and Columbus, Ohio. So Ohio again. And, you know, we went there and I stood outside the largest, I think the only still functioning uranium processing facility in North America, 300 football fields of radioactive waste.
Wow.
One miner. The first time they started it in the 80s. This was well at the tail end of the Cold War. And they told these people, oh, just for 15 years, you know, whatever. No, 300 football fields. And now Estonia is sending its waste, radioactive waste to Utah. 5,000 miles. Why is that happening? And to me, it feels like very much that it's a ritual desecration of this land, you know, and So anyway, I guess that's what I'm trying to like tell these stories to say, you know, you think right now that it's about lockdowns or it's about digital currency or, and those are parts of the story for sure, but they definitely want to keep you narrow, because if you actually opened up your heart to, and you had the strength, not from a place of shame, but to say, wow, there's this reckoning, right? That there's this thing that it goes all the way back. It goes back 200 years. It goes back 1,000 years. And we're in it. And how do we untangle it? Because guess what? The people who were tapping into the noetics, they know that it's more than physical reality. They totally know. And they're looking to manipulate that. And in fact, the Manhattan Project that created the bombs that took the vanadium and the uranium from Utah, that letter was advanced by, his name was Alexander Sachs. And Alexander Sachs was the head, later became the head economist for Lehman Brothers.
Sachs, just to say, Sachs is a royal family. I mean, the Saxons and the, it's a royal family.
Yeah, originally I thought he was Goldman Sachs, but no, he was Lehman Brothers. But still, he went to Roosevelt and he said, you need to start this Manhattan Project here. And it was Einstein and Leo Szilard, and he was one of the Russian physicists. Mm-hmm. There you go. And not just for weapons, but for energy and health. Health was part of it all the way back, all the way back. They said it was for health. But health is really posthumanism. And that got underway. And then at the end of the war, Vannevar Bush, who is different, I think, from the Bush family, the presidential Bush family, but he created the National Science Foundation under that guise of the radiation for health.
For health, yeah.
For health. And it's gone. So what is health? Is health that we live as a cyborg? Like that we, you know, is it some sort of, oh gosh, what do they say? Like the people who are like the mortification of the flesh, you know, is this idea that we're supposed to somehow shed our reality? Hmm. But I think if you look at it and you imagine that maybe there's something much greater beyond, but that it is our, that there's a certain role that we play in a physical body in relationship to the world and the environment and one another in this shape, why would you just destroy that? Because if we're here, it's because that there's a sacred reason for us to be here in this form and shape, I think. And if someone's coming to like erase that and to say, no, you should live as a hologram, but no one's coming right out and saying, other than maybe Mark Andreessen, who says reality privilege, but that's good for us. And at the Mormon Transhumanist Conference, the opening, well, their logo, it said, what will you create? And what they said was, and again, it's, I do not think that this group of individuals represents the breadth of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It's definitely a small group, but the church has vast resources, you know, maybe even more than the Vatican. And a lot of it's plowed into technology and biotechnology. Yeah. So I would assume their worldview is in alignment, at least with the investments being made mm-hmm. currently, that part of the faith is about transfiguration and about that God wants you to use the tools to uplift and to even raise the dead. And God is just waiting for them to use these tools. And so what they said was, what will you create? Worlds upon worlds upon worlds. And that was their opening, worlds upon worlds upon worlds. And so for me, I feel like that is misguided, and that those worlds upon worlds are these golem worlds or these counterfeit worlds are not worlds with the spark of life and spirit and faith. It's some other thing. And maybe in those worlds upon worlds, they feel like that they can engineer it through their signals intelligence and their global brains and their simulations. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to go that way. But we can't just sit back and be like, probably won't work out. I'm sure that God will stop that at some point. I think that there is a test that says, okay, those of Absolutely. You guys who know, are you going to go to Utah and tell them not to do that? Are you going to stand outside the uranium mine, the processing plant, and say, this is not okay? Because maybe God's waiting for us to show up and say that. I don't have 2,000 marchers behind me. I don't have anyone besides me and Jason and my friend Cliff to show up at the atomic clock and go, nope, we're not running on man time here with your cesium molecule in your, you know, keyhole satellite surveillance. We're on sacred time. But somebody has to do it. And I don't know. It's weird. That's what I I feel.
Well, you obviously do it. I do it, and there's a bunch of us who do it. And to be honest, a few days ago, I asked from the audience. I had like, I don't know, 100, 200 people on the show, and asked them, please call. You know, the line is open. Please call and ask a question, say something. And no one is calling. And okay, so I'm speaking and I tell them what I want to say and I show some pictures. No one is calling. And then one woman called out of, let's say, 150 people in average. One woman called and I said, thank you very much for calling, you know, because, and these people, my audience is really with me, all right? Mm-hmm. It's like, he's with me on everything. He's like top notch, you know, cutting edge of information. They will see this talk, even if not now, then later or tomorrow, yeah. They will see it because they know it's you, they know it's me, they will see it. So I tell her, thank you for calling, etc. And then she said, yeah, it's nothing. And I said, no, it's not nothing. You need to understand. There's a game being played. Most people are sitting on the bench, eating popcorn, eating sunflower seeds, eating whatever, but they don't take part. They just want to enjoy the show. While there's only a few of us, a bunch of us, who is on one side, and all these globalists and all the, and the plans are on the other side. Now we are running out of breath. We have less and less resources, and we need you, the spectators, to come down to the field and play with us. So when I'm asking someone to call, it's because I want to make you active, proactive, not passive. Enough with being passive and sliding your finger on the phone and watching another talk or an interview. When you start to speak truth outside to your neighbor, to your, you know, counsel, to whoever, whether it's on the social networks, whether it's in real life, physical life, not metaverse bullshit, but real life, then you start to make a change. Then you really become part of the game and you're not sitting waiting what the result will be. And most people, they still don't see it that way. They still don't, see that the way to win is to take part in the game. And sometimes, as we know, to take part in the game, sometimes it's to say, no, I don't want to play. But to say, to be active, no, I prefer not to put a mask. Thank you. No, I will pass on this bullshit swab thingy. Thank you. No, I prefer not to have injection. Maybe later on next year. Let me check. Just saying this is being active. And like you said before, it's a narrative war. And when you're on the right side of this war, meaning with us, with God, with life, then you don't need to do much because A, we are the majority. B, sometimes it's enough just to not to take part in something being offered to you. This is quite a lot. But the majority have not done that yet. And I'm waiting and I'm trying to encourage, like you, more spectators to come down to the field and play with us, even if it means you need to say, no, I prefer not to have your whatever injection or whatever you offer me, or digital currency or a health passport and all this bullshit. You know, another thing I showed roughly a month ago, I showed a Gesundheit passport from Second World War and the EU health passport. I showed them both in the same screen, just so you understand. Gesundheit passport of the Nazis and health passport of the very advanced EU looking after our health. Just for people to see that, yes, there is a place to compare between these two times we live in. Alison, we have something like 5 minutes before we finish, before we wrap it up. So if you can again, maybe not again, but maybe a new angle, about the golem, because I think we should do it more regularly, like maybe every fortnight we should have this conversation, maybe just 1 hour. Just, I think it's really good. For me, it's really good. Because,
you know, I know the last time I roped you into like 4 hour conversation.
Yeah. So this is what I mean. You see, I keep it in 1 hour frame, but let's do it more regularly. So yeah. I think it's better also for you. So you don't need to prepare a lot of things and to fill the space. The Golem of Rehovot, the part of Weizmann Institute and the Israeli government in all this. Please, 2 minutes about that. What are we up against?
Well, I mean, it's integrated. I mean, that computer that was built, or I think the third one was actually done with MITRE Corporation too, from Massachusetts. So we're all in this together. And I think what the narratives like to do is to try to fragment people and say, oh, these people are responsible, right? It's Israel or it's China or it's Russia or it's, and no, the metaverse is a global program. And at the top, these systems of power that are corrupted, that are anti-life, anti-nature, anti-God, are all working like at this level. Mm-hmm. And so I think the most powerful thing is to from a loving place, because these guys like Pitrum Soropkin and this other guy, Robert Hartman, who was an Ohio State professor, who was the father of profit sharing. And he created measured altruism and sold it to companies to be good. So the early origins of impact investing go back to Robert Hartman, who came out of Germany through Mexico, and they want to put on a dashboard. And so I think that the most beautiful thing is to be able to live, to creatively communicate in a playful way. And I love that you said play, because that's what they can't factor into the equation of all of it. Is the love, is the
grace,
is the creativity, what is your talent? And you don't necessarily have to have a huge group of people to do it, because I do believe in looking at this, that it is about the noosphere, it is about energetics, it's about spirit. And that's what they're trying to put in a jar and take from us, is to say, absolutely, live on the atomic clock, live on the blockchain, live as a twin, and disconnect yourself from the larger energetic power. Like, you and I are connected, even though like it's weirdly through this device, but there is an energetic connection outside of this device between us.
Absolutely.
I've found enough people, unusual people, like all over the world who are in the, I'm like, we did this before. Yeah. I don't know. At some point we did this before and we're finding each other. So don't wait until you have the perfect. Don't let the perfect be the good. Do your thing. Share your gifts. Share them with joy. Be the thing that you want people to be. Try not to live in fear, because that's where they want to keep us in fear. And know that you're powerful. John Trudell, we are power. We are power. And these guys, Stolman, Reiser, Weissman Institute, they want to put it in a computer, but it won't fit. It won't fit.
That's why you think they will fail, because it won't fit?
I don't think it will fit. I don't think it will fit.
And it's the human factor. I mean, never mind human, because I learned that the word human is from them. It's from the golem. But men and women of the world, you think this factor, this surprise factor, this creativity, love, grace, compassion, empathy, you think this is the factor or factors while that's why it will fail. That's why they won't fit it.
I think so. I've had too many things happen to me since I started this journey that I can't chalk up to any rational reason, places, people, things. And love your life, love your people, put that out, because that's the most powerful thing. And I think that's the thing that saddened me the most somewhat in the resistance, is that people, there's a bitterness at this point, which is understandable. I'm not saying that I don't, but the biggest resistance is to face this and say, you know, it's bigger, and with a worldwide solidarity, right? Whatever your faith, because that is the resonance between humans and that natural energetic system. That's the thing. And it's not because ours is better than yours. It's authentic. Be true. And then don't fall in, because many faiths have said by the end, your leaders will betray you. I've had people who left the LDS church, and they said, yeah, if you actually read our books, it say at the end, there will be these things that people will misrepresent, and you have to follow your heart. And that's where I think we're at this point. There's an enchantment going on. We can be the spellbreakers.
It's funny because we are connected out of this machine, you know, and from the first time I saw you in the machine, I knew that we are connected because of the way you think, the way you see things, the way you express yourselves. Although I don't have your English and your vocabulary, we are still connected, because the truth is what connects us, and connecting the dots off-truth for more people to see a one coherent picture, I think it's really important. And thank you for everything you do. And you know, I still love you. Every time we meet, I'm saying I love you. And I still love you, Alison.
We'll do it. We'll keep talking. I'll have more stuff. I'll have to tell you all about Santa Barbara. That's my newest thing.
Excellent. Excellent. So let's stay in touch. Let's do, you know, 1 hour shows. It's good. I mean, people anyway, they have like less and less span in their head to take it. So I think it's good. And let's stay in touch. And maybe in a week or two, we do another one. All right?
Sounds good.
Excellent. Alison McDowell, the one and only. Thank you ever so much. God bless us all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.